Good evening, folks. This is The Weird Part. I am your host, Vincent Trewell. I have a special guest tonight, a accomplished researcher, a scholar of the paranormal, a both visual artist and an author, and a magical practitioner. Probably a couple other superlatives that I will get to a little later, but please join me in welcoming Cosmic Witch Susan Demeter. Welcome aboard, Susan.
Hi, thank you. I'm so happy to be here talking to you tonight.
This is
Well,
something
night
I've looked to for a
for
while. Yes, you are at night. Well, just to explain, I am here in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and Susan is in Italy, a beautiful part of the world. And please, where are you in Italy?
I'm in Bologna. Actually, I'm just south of Bologna in the Apennino Mountains. I live in a very rural ancient village on top of a mountain, amidst Roman and Etruscan runes, and I have outside of me a very holy special mountain that was very special to the ancient pagans as well as early Christians in the area. So it's a rather magical, mystical place. I love it here. So it's
That sounds fascinating. Wow. That I expect you have kind of a vibe, for lack of a better term. It seems like a very special place, something that maybe things happen there that don't happen everywhere else all the time.
well, there's a lot of history here, and that kind of plays into it. I mean, the nature here is beautiful, but the nature is also very beautiful from where I came from in Canada. But it's definitely having such a large impact of human history and various peoples, and that in Italy, it does add to that magical energy that you're tapping into here.
I imagine so, yes. Wow, that sounds really powerful. As you mentioned, you are originally from Canada. Kind of, what's your origin story? How did you get interested in the paranormal and the unexplained and magical practice and things like that?
Oh, that's a fairly lengthy story, but I mean, parts of it are I'll try and give you a bit of a condensed version. A lot of it is in my book, Cosmic Witch, which is in part autobiographical. And I talk about experiences with the paranormal from a very young age that I have come to consider to be initiations into magical thinking and my own magical practice. I would say it began probably somewhere between
Susan, you're just glitching for
three
a
and 5 years
second
of
there.
age. Oh, okay.
It's probably
Can you?
just the distance, but yeah. Okay. 3 to 5. Wow, that is really young.
Usually, about that age that I remember my first encounter with a little being, a little man. And this was not like a pleasant experience because I knew that this being was not supposed to be there, was didn't you know looked humanoid but not quite human. And even in my child's mind, I knew that this being was not of this reality, and it frightened me, and I didn't know what to make of it at the time. And from that time forward, I was pestered with these beings, sometimes in my bedroom as a child. I would get very scared. I always had to have a light on. I had my stuffed animals all around me all the time. I thought at that point, I guess because of whatever pop culture I'd been exposed to, Scooby-Doo or whatever, that these were ghosts and they were scary and it was traumatizing. And then later on, as a teenager and becoming a young adult, I kind of looked back on these experiences and I wondered, how much of it was my imagination. I'm a very imaginative person. And then I had a UFO experience at 23. with another witness, which was my brother-in-law. And at that point, I had to kind of reorient my thinking and starting to look back at my childhood and say, wow, maybe there was a lot more to this than I might have thought, trying to, when you're a child, you're accepting of a lot of things and you're willing to vocalize things. And then you're taught that, these things don't exist. So in our adult minds, we might think back and think, maybe that was just an imaginary friend, or maybe it was something else, or, my imagination playing tricks on me. But then when you have an experience as a young adult and you're wide awake and you know you're seeing something outside of this known reality, then I had to go back and reassess all these strange things that were going on as a child.
Yes, if I can just butt in for a second, looking back and knowing what you know now, would you say that the things you saw when you were very young, did they scare you because you were a kid and pop culture and other outside influences, or did you think they had malicious intent?
They seemed to have malicious intent.
Oh, okay.
They looked frightening. It's not like they were, I mean, there was a couple of experiences I had where it might have been more like pleasant or more kind or not so sinister. But these beings, they would be sinister. They would look sinister. They would have an angry countenance. They would be like,
Oh,
and
wow.
yeah, they were not trying to be friendly. I
Okay.
mean,
No, I get it. I
but
mean, they yeah,
yeah.
that gets pretty scary, to be very honest, especially for a little kid. Yeah. Wow.
It was quite traumatizing. And
I bet.
yeah, and to be honest, like as a young adult and into my late teenagehood, I did suffer a lot of anxiety, which I think was a kind of a PTSD from these experiences as a kid. They kind of stopped as a teenager, but then they started happening again and in different ways. So I kind of went from seeing these little beings to seeing apparitions of what I would say more humans, like dead people, to UFOs. So all of these things kind of lent themselves into a state of anxiety and that which I had to deal with for quite a while.
Oh, yes, that would be nerve-wracking. Yeah.
I did see psychologists. I did have to have therapy for anxiety. It was not easy, but then again, initiations really never are an easy thing. They're often described as painful. So, I mean, although I wasn't physically harmed that I can remember, these experiences with these beings were frightening. And if pop culture played into it, probably a little bit. But I remember when I was a kid, I really much liked, I liked Scooby-Doo. And of course, in the early incarnations of Scooby-Doo on TV, they always solved it. This was like, it was always Old Man Jenkins, right? Like,
There are always a rubber mask being pulled off of somebody, and there's your answer. Yes. I
exactly. And
love
then,
Scooby-Doo. If it
oh
wasn't for, I probably wouldn't
yeah.
be doing this, you know?
And then I also was really, really into like reading Nancy Drew books. And the same thing, like, she was always there was always some mystery. There was a supernatural overtone to the mystery, but it was always resolved in the end as something natural. And it's funny because as an adult, many, many years later, I found a Nancy Drew book in a yard sale, and I tried to read it, and boy, it didn't age well, these
Yeah.
stories. So,
Yeah. I've
but
had that
at the
experience too of something I really loved as a youth, and then you look back on it in as a full-fledged adult and you're like, why did I ever like that? Oh man, what the hell? This is crap. Once upon a time, well, back when I was in high school, junior high school, loved Tales from the Dark Side. Absolutely ate that up. And then decades later, I'm working full time. I'm in law enforcement. I'm going to law school at night. But one day, everything lined up and I had a total day off. And they had on cable, they had, I think it was Thriller Network, they had a marathon of Tales from the Dark Side. said, oh, this is great. I'm going to get in here and watch these shows. They're all super and they're terrible. I'm looking at this like, this is garbage. Why did I like this so much? And not everything, I don't know, maybe I'm different. It probably isn't the material that changed. It's probably me. But yeah, that happens, doesn't it?
Exactly. But I think in some ways that kind of was something that it should have provided at least some comfort, because there always was that natural explanation at the end. Whereas with my own experiences that I was having, it's not something that you can go to school and tell your friends about. I
No,
did.
I probably don't want to do that.
Because I mean, if you confide in other kids, they're going to bully you. You don't want to be known as like the neighborhood weirdo. And then, with your parents, there's only so much you can tell them as well, because you kind of know, like when you're having these experiences, they're outside of reality. People are going to, not accept them. They're weird, right? So
Oh, yeah.
it's a very isolating thing to try and talk about, especially when you're a child. So there
Oh
was that.
yes, that's it. It's something it puts you in, kind of separates you from a lot of people, even though some of those people have had their own experiences, but we're all carrying them around and can't tell each other about them
Exactly.
sometimes.
I think now, being an adult and the times we're living in now, with since 2017 at least, with all the UFO stuff in the United States coming out, and it's worldwide news, I think it's made it easier for people to talk about some of their stranger things that they might have seen. Maybe not the true high strangeness, but some strange things. At least it's easier, I think, now maybe to say I've seen something odd in the sky or
Oh,
whatever.
I think you're completely right. If nothing else comes of disclosure, and I'll be honest, that may be what happens, but at least it has opened up the window a ways that you can talk about this stuff and not, get nothing but jokes and, still be a serious person. But yeah, I saw this, and I think that has loosened up a great deal in the last few years. Yeah.
Which is a really, really wonderful thing for witnesses,
Absolutely.
be able to just
Absolutely.
be open and talk about these things.
Yes.
But
Speaking of which, I kind of cut you off when you were mentioning your UFO, big UFO experience early in adulthood. So yeah, please go ahead.
there were a few of them, and again, I talk about them in Cosmic Witch as initiations and sort of guideposts into my magical practice. Although, as a teenager, like a lot of teenagers, I got interested in the occult. I got interested in astrology, especially, and then card reading and tarot. So that already started, that interest was there. But I had really started thinking of my experiences as a child as probably something that may or may not have been true. And your memory kind of gets hazy as you're an adult and things start taking over. Well, in 1990, I was very young and I had two small children. I had a baby and a toddler. And I was living on the 10th floor of a condominium unit. And it was late in the evening. And my husband at the time was asleep. He had to go to work early in the morning. And I had my brother-in-law over, and we were staying up late. We were watching Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, who I will always associate with UFOs, because I will never forget. I'm watching Elvira, and I realize, okay, Elvira is coming to an end. It's about 1 o'clock in the morning. And, I have young kids. I was very, very young myself at the time. I had children very young. And I thought, okay, I got to get up. And we had these sliding glass doors, like that kind of in this window that encompassed like almost an entire wall going out into a balcony. And I had a safety lock on it. And it was my habit to check before going to sleep. So I went out, and the balcony was facing out towards Lake Ontario. And in the distance, you can see the nuclear power plant. which is Pickering Nuclear Generating Station. And I went and I was going to check the lock. And as I looked through the window, I saw this huge red glowing thing in the vicinity of the nuclear power plant. So of course I was intrigued. But the first thing I thought, because I'd never seen anything like that before, was maybe it's a reflection off the TV. So I turned around and I looked at the TV and I looked at, no, it's something outside. So I opened the glass doors. It's November the 4th. And I go outside and I can see this red glowing giant pulsing thing over the nuclear power plant. And I yelled out over to my brother-in-law, who's still on the inside, and I said, "You got to come out here. I'm seeing this thing. It's really weird. You got to come see this." And so he comes out and he kind of grabbed my arm. We were looking at it for a few seconds and he said, "I think we're seeing a UFO." I went, "What?"
Wow, that is
It was
fascinating.
so weird. And then I turned around and I said to him, "They know we can see them." And it was a very weird statement to make because I forgot that I said that until a few years later. I completely forgot that I had said that. And this pulsating thing to me seemed to implode on itself at some point. After a few seconds or minutes or whatever, it's very hard to tell when you're in this situation exactly how much time goes by because you're in shock.
Oh, yes.
And then it shot straight up into the sky. And from what my brother-in-law remembered, it just to him, it just imploded. He didn't see the shooting up to the sky, but it was like this giant red glowing stop signy thing in the sky.
Like
And it
kind
was
of like
weird.
an orb, a sphere, or not
It
so
was
much.
like, it was like it almost looked like it was octagonal shape
Okay,
before
wow.
it imploded, and it was bright red and it was pulsing and there was no sound. And I remember looking down, there was a roadway that was running parallel, and I was looking down towards it and I saw a single car and I thought, this person must have seen this. This thing was so huge. It was like taking up the sky, and what is this? And of course, this is in the days before internet. So
Okay,
I put
yeah.
on I put on the news stations, but I couldn't find anything on. It was like after 1 o'clock. It was still on that day when you got the TV goes off, and unless you have like super cable or something, it's just you get fuzz.
Oh,
It's
yes. Back in
the
the days of of
end
snow
of
after midnight or after two or whatever, yeah.
Exactly. So we just sat up all night long talking. It's like, what did we see? What could this have been? This, and this. And and then my husband got up for work and I was telling him and he said, yeah, I could hear you guys yelling. He said, I didn't, I was so tired, I gotta go to work. And to this day, he says to me, I wish I would have got up and had a look. I've seen what you guys saw. So
And your
again, Dave,
brother-in-law saw the same thing that you did? I
yes.
mean, more or less. Okay.
Yeah, so because we were pretty much the only difference is that I saw it shoot up straight into the sky, like straight up, whereas he saw it just the implosion, what looked like it imploded upon itself. But other than that, like we were agreed upon the color and the size and the weirdness of it all.
Was
And
it kind of comforting to have somebody else see the thing too?
yes. Because at that point, I knew I wasn't overtired. I wasn't seeing things. I had someone else. We weren't drinking. It was like a weeknight. We were just sitting up and watching Elvira and eating popcorn. I mean, it was not, there was no reason to doubt that we had seen something, even if we didn't know how to explain it.
Oh,
So,
yes.
yeah. So then I wrote a letter because first of all, I wasn't really interested in UFOs at that point. I liked Star Wars and things as a kid. I wasn't really into UFOs. So I was my experiences to me were all ghostly related up to that point. And I went to the library because what you do, there's no internet. And I got out a whole bunch of books on UFOs, and I got out one by J. Allen Hynek. And it had the QFOS address on the back of it. So I wrote this lengthy letter and I sent it off to Chicago. And a few weeks later, it came back returned address, not good anymore. I didn't know
Oh
that
man.
it had passed away. And I just kept it because I didn't know where to turn. And it wasn't until years later when I had a home computer, say about 1997, that I was able to get online and I was able to find a UFO community, and I found MUFON, which they eventually investigated the sighting.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. And there was a lot more. And this is where I found out there was a lot of UFO sightings involving the nuclear power plant, going back to its inception.
I was going to ask you about the location is really loaded there. They seem interested. Whatever they are, they seem really interested in our nuclear programs,
Yes.
military and electricity generating. Yeah.
Yeah. So I really, at that point, like I said, it reoriented my thinking towards my childhood experiences, and it kind of really ignited my interest in UFOs. And then it was a number of years later in 2001 that I had another sighting, this one very close range with a good friend of mine. And again, I view it as an initiation, and that was in 2001. And again, very close to the, even closer this time to the nuclear power plant. I had moved to a townhouse in Ajax, Ontario, and I used to like to go on walks along the hiking trail, which leads like from the nuclear power plant. It runs along the coast there, and you can go on hikes and whatnot. And I saw another UFO with a different person this time, but I was still with another person. And that was, there's a CGI recreation of that on YouTube that Finn
I was
Hanley.
going to mention I linked to that from your website, and it is great. It is kind of in a cartoon format, but it's very nice, and it that's
Yeah.
something people want to watch, definitely.
Well, when we were working on it literally, I started to cry because it just, everything comes back to you. That was so shocking. And so, like, at that point, like there was no denying that I was experiencing something either otherworldly or out of this world, or to this day, I really don't know, but it was like a giant spaceship, very close range.
Wow,
Yeah.
that must have been really intense.
It was like we started when it, like, again, you're in that state of shock. It's that almost Oz-like effect where you feel like time has stopped, all the sounds have stopped, you're focusing on this thing. It's like you're gobsmacked. I'm sure my jaw was hanging wide open. But when it disappeared, it's all of a sudden there was this intense fear that we both felt. We were holding hands and we just ran to where our car was parked. This happened in the evening. So my husband at that point was home with the kids, and it was just me and Chris, and we were going out for a walk and, to kind of shoot the shit and, have our female bonding time away from the kids, because she had small kids at the time too. And although I had been very interested in UFOs, and I was actually involved in a spook light investigation at this point, and I had investigated other UFO cases, and researched them, I had not planned to see this. I didn't have a camera with me. Again, those are the days where I had a phone, but it wasn't a smartphone, didn't have a camera, just a phone. So, you're going by memory and what I could sketch out, and but it was terrifying.
I
So when
believe it.
we saw this thing out overlooking over the lake, and when it disappeared, it's just like we ran for our car, like just ran. It was like terrifying.
Yes. And you, at this point, how far along are you in magical practice, and how does the two things kind of work together? Because usually when we think, when just kind of the general population thinks of UFOs, we think of something scientific, something very materialist, you might say. Something that
Yes.
doesn't have much of anything to do with any sort of mysticism or occultism. But if you go a little further, it's not like that. But please, like, how did the two kind of interconnect?
Well, again, I viewed that as a secondary initiation. Now, I took it as a very personal sighting because at the time, okay, so when I after the MUFON investigation of my first sighting, I got involved with UFO community in Southern Ontario at that point. And I became a bit disillusioned with it all. And in general, I started I got involved in a spook light investigation where, at least in part, we were able to debunk the main spook light as car headlights. So that's a whole other story right there.
Yes.
And it didn't, and we didn't resolve everything that went on in this location, but we were able to prove that some of these things that were going on there were in fact car headlights that were reflecting at quite a distance. And people were seeing them as a singular light, and there was a legend and a mythos all surrounding this. So I was becoming very disillusioned, and I joined a skeptical group.
Okay.
I had met them because I did a presentation at the University of Toronto on the spook light investigation, and I was met by these skeptics, and they invited me to Skeptics Canada. So I was kind of happily there. And but when you get involved with people who are skeptics, you then again, the whole idea of, well, what did I really see? Like, what is this true? Because you start getting into that mindset. And
Oh, yes.
that's kind of where I was. Like, I had done the presentation and all this on the spook lights, and I had kind of was in that getting into that mindset when bam, it's like this giant thing appeared. And that was the end of that. That was the end of the skepticism as
It's
far
hard
as
to be a debunker with the ships right over you, Yes.
you can't, like, I realized, like, I would be intellectually dishonest if I continued on that path of spending this time with the skeptic. Although it was kind of fun. Like, I learned some parlor magic tricks and things. I learned
Well, I
A
think
little
it'd
bit
probably be
about how to
fascinating,
get
yeah.
through. Yeah, like they're like, and I met some really nice people. Not all skeptical people are,
Oh no,
nasty,
I
So, but at the same time, like I said, I had been honing my skills with the tarot and the astrology and all this kind of stuff, from teenagehood on, this interest. And then when I had that second major UFO sighting, I was still a little disillusioned with the nuts and bolts kind of ETH approach. So at that point, I started doing more research and thinking on different ideas as to what might be behind this. And I think that helped with dovetailing my spirituality, my spiritual practice, which is very nature-based. My interest in parapsychology and psi and the UFO phenomena. I think that's how it all kind of dovetailed together, is because the UFOs that I experienced, and I have experienced a couple more since then that I would consider larger spacecrafty like UFOs, they were an initiation into the idea that reality is much more rich and depth and breadth than we normally have in our consensus day-to-day reality. So with that knowledge, it kind of coalesced all these things together, my interests in UFOs, my interest in magic, my interest in consciousness and occult practice kind of came together to where I am today. So
Wow, okay. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
I've kind of noticed that the real nuts and bolts UFO people and organizations aren't that far from the skeptical debunker organizations. They just accept aliens are real. Other than that, they don't like generally anything that involves like them communicating with you. For a long
Yes.
time, I don't know if it was MUFON or APRO, but one wouldn't even discuss occupants. We just want craft, but nobody gets out of the
Yeah.
craft, you know, and would often kind of throw overboard anything that was too much. But
Yes.
a lot of people's experiences are too much, you know,
Yeah.
and you're throwing maybe the most important parts away if you're just looking for the radar signature or the landing marks or what have you. You know, that a lot of it, my impression is that a lot of it is communication from
Yeah.
some other entities to ourselves. And that's the real important part. The rest is wrapping, you know.
Exactly. And I mean, I don't want to just say the ETH is not, there's no validity to it, because I think there could be, like, I don't know. I mean, this could be aliens coming in spaceships to visit us. I really don't know. But I think that this simplistic idea of it as just, okay, they're coming, they're traversing all these stars to come and do sometimes really horrific things to people, sometimes good things, but sometimes really horrific things, to me just seems a little nonsensical. And then when you start
Yes.
looking into like Jacques Vallée's work, and that you can realize there's a lot more there, you know, that has to do with like myth and folklore and things. It's almost like it's, you know, like people maybe were experiencing fairies a certain way, you know, centuries ago, or witches, or different things, fairy tale versions of witches, I should say. And now they're experiencing space aliens. But the stories, when you break down all the myth and that's surrounding it, there's the same kind of patterns over and over again. So I
Almost
don't know.
like something reaching out to us in terms that we can handle. And those
Well,
terms keep changing over time, but they've been here a long, long time.
I think so,
And
yes.
for maybe before we have, you know. And yeah, I don't take anything off the table, but that does seem to be the ongoing experience across all cultures and throughout time, that the other reaches out to us in as something that we're able to digest. And maybe 1,000 years ago, it's a Marian apparition in a Catholic country. They don't seem to have any Marian apparitions in like Nepal. You know, it's something else there, you know. But it reaches out as something that, and maybe 3,000 years ago, it's, you know, Apollo. It's something that you can handle at the time. And now they have to be. They have to be aliens, but there's always something that's always toning it down for us so we don't freak out completely. That's the impression I get.
Exactly. There's a story here, from very close to where I live. There's a castle that hosts a dragon, and
Oh.
this dragon apparently, yeah, you can actually go see it. It's a really cool reproduction of a dragon. It's very big. It's about two stories big in their dungeon. But they have this story that dates back to the 13th century, and I mean, you have to remember, these people that lived back then were quite religious. So when they were swearing on a Bible, they really took that seriously. So you had like hundreds of witnesses to what they claimed was a dragon flying over their castle and, you know, causing all these problems with their fields, I guess, with the fire breathing and whatnot. And the church developed a weapon, and they shot this dragon down, and they captured it, and they
Oh,
brought it
wow.
back to the castle where they kept this thing hidden. Now, to me, when I start breaking down the story, it really does sound like a modern version of, you know, these UFOs that get shot down by the authority figure, and then they're taken away, you know, and
Yeah,
secretly.
put somewhere underground where you can't see them, and yeah. But
Yeah,
you know they're
so.
there, but you can't, nobody's allowed to see it, and yeah.
Yeah,
Wow.
exactly. So, I
That's
mean, like
about
it.
1300. So that, yeah, that goes
Yeah,
back a
yeah.
ways. Yes, and yet the story is very similar. You can update it right to today, you know.
Exactly. Where, you know, people are having
It's
these experiences with these UFOs, and they get shot down, and then they're hidden away by the authority figures, which in back then here was the papal state, so would have been to church.
Yes,
And
wow.
apparently they have now. I haven't seen it yet, but there's a museum here somewhere not too far that has a portion of the weapon that was devised that apparently took down this dragon that was lying on the castle.
If you know, what is it, like a big crossbow, or
I would assume it would be like a trebuchet. Like I don't really know. There is some records of this, but I mean they're going to be in Latin.
yes,
So, and my Italiano is still
medieval Latin, yeah.
exactly. So I'm going to try and get to this museum and see if I can see it, but I would assume that it would have been like a trebuchet or something that, I mean, or a giant crossbow, same kind of idea,
Trebuchet is, I'm sorry, I'm not familiar
like a
with it.
catapult.
Oh, okay, yes, yeah, sure. I'm thinking, I don't want to sit here and try to sound smart, like, oh, a trebuchet, well, of course. I didn't know.
I think I got
Wait,
that
like,
term from playing Age of Empires back in
okay,
the
yes. Oh, hurl something into the sky and have it take it out. Yeah,
Exactly.
okay. That is a fascinating story, though.
Yeah.
And you know what looks like a fire-breathing dragon? I mean, fill in the
Flying.
blanks, but it's not something
Exactly. It's
normal.
a menacing thing from the sky, and all these
Yes.
things, seem to be coming from the sky, or they're involved in with the sky. So whether they're gods or the Blessed Virgin or UFOs or there's this involvement of being up in the sky. So I don't know, but yeah. So that's basically how I would say UFOs led me into my spiritual practice and my witch practice, is because after having that second major sighting as an adult with another adult present, it reoriented my thinking, and I guess I became a UFO lifer, and I started exploring it from a magical and an occult point of view, which I found was a little bit more resonating for me than the just the basic trying to explain it from a scientific point of view. Although I find all of that valid, but for me, I found that trying to influence it, trying to communicate with it, and using magical tools was producing more for me, information-wise, than just trying to do the nuts and bolts thing. Which, I mean, because when you're doing that, and I have done that, basically you're looking for natural causes, and I mean, you're not really finding out anything new about what it might be, because either you're gonna resolve it, or think this is most likely gonna have a natural explanation, or this is a mystery. So
Yes, yes.
I'm accepting that there's the mystery. Now I want to explore that mystery. So for me, magical tools are what I employ now to try and communicate and to try and conjure these things.
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
And now, if you don't mind my asking, because I don't want to press you for a level of detail that you're not comfortable with, but when you say magical, are you talking Wicca? Are you talking Goetic, Golden Dawn type of thing? Are you talking chaos magic? Are you talking something different that, kind
I
of,
would,
go ahead.
from a spiritual standpoint, I guess I would be closest to Wicca, but from the experimentation that I've done, probably I've been influenced very much by Aleister Crowley and it, and some of his ideas, which of course were also coming from the Golden Dawn. But when I work with spirits, I'm absolutely more of a folk tradition witch. I view the spirits as my friends. I don't try to command them or anything.
Yes, not the binding and the, all of
Yes.
that.
Yeah, I'm not. It's just it doesn't feel me, and I kind of a lot of this stuff is coming from my heart and from my intuition. So I will take from people that inspire me. So I have read a lot of different people, but basically, no, I would be considered more of a traditional folk witch, and I work with the local spirits that are here. And my own spirit guides, and I observe nature cycles, and the Sabbats that are associated with them. So I would
Wow,
definitely see myself
specific.
as more of a witch. But I do experiment. So with the experimentation and the conjuring in that, which I do, I talk a little bit about that in The Cosmic Witch, and I just talk a lot more about that in my chapter for the Deep Weird book.
Yes, you have something quite recent out. Please tell us about that. Yeah.
So the Deep Weird book is it's a compilation of looking at cases that are so mind-boggling that the Academy, as far as the universities and that the scholars, they won't even deal with these cases. So what are you going to do with something that is so mind-boggling and so weird on the high strange level that people don't want to deal with it?
There's
And
probably a lot of things where it's nobody's job, it's nobody's field. It's not exactly psychology, it's not physics, it's not biology, so we're not touching it. Is that about right?
well, it's that boggle threshold, which I think a lot of people have, and even like you had said even before with MUFON and that. When you deal with the high strangeness, and I mean this is just my opinion, but
Sure.
when I was doing like UFO investigation, I found that if there wasn't high strangeness, it probably could be explained by some natural way, that the actual phenomena, whatever it is, will leave some weirdness. And I would find that sometimes people would have these experiences with UFOs, and then I was one of those boots on the ground type people. I would go and physically meet with people because I found that they would give me a lot more information sitting and having a cup of coffee with them than if I was just emailing back and forth or even on the phone. And often when I did that, people would say, okay, I saw this thing. But then when they would become comfortable with me, they'd give me more detail. Or they would tell me things like, I saw this thing, but I also grew up in a haunted house. Or, I saw this thing, and then, a year later, all of a sudden, this stuff started happening, this poltergeist stuff in my house. Right?
Wow.
It's like there's
And they
there.
do tend to come together, don't they?
Yeah, there seems to be this high strangeness factor. And when like you're dealing with high strangeness, there's a point where some people just can't take any more. Like they're like, okay, oh come on, this is way too much. Like I saw a UFO, it followed me in my car, I might have seen an occupant, but then the occupant, he showed up in a clown mask, and there was a giant pink bunny in my driveway. That's too much. That's the boggle threshold. But there are cases like this. There are people that have very, very strange experiences, and what do you do about them? And that's what I think Jack was trying to do with his book, Deep Weird. So my contribution to that is a way to explore the very deep weird through conjuration.
Oh, wow.
So
Wow.
That's kind of where I'm at now. And then I'm going to do a follow-up to Cosmic Witch, which is going to be a lot more occult, and
Oh,
it's going
wow.
to get into things such as the conjuring of UFOs, methodologies that have worked for me, things I have done, and as well as the idea of using consciousness as a vehicle to traverse the stars, so to speak.
Wow, that is fascinating. When you've interacted with spirits, have you Like, is the experience as direct as like you and I are talking now, or is it something very different? And can you tell a difference between like nature spirits and like UFO spirits?
Yes, I do. It's a feeling that I have an information that's given to me sometimes visually, sometimes externally. I can hear things and sometimes just in my mind's eye. But I can tell the difference that there the genus loci, the spirit of the land I'm living in now is very different than say an entity from a UFO. Or a different type of spirit that might be haunting the woods. The some of them can be very cheeky and like to play
Wow.
jokes and things. But I can feel that. And as an adult, it doesn't. I have agency over my experiences to a point, and I've learned this through years of occult practice that I can shut things down if I need to. And I think that that's another thing that's important for people to realize if they're going to pursue this type of research, is sometimes you have to take a step back from it or realize that you can set boundaries for yourself. Because I have seen people, upend their lives and go through a lot of problems because you get so pulled into it. That you have to remember there's a consensus reality that we have to deal with, and it keeps us sane.
I think that's a very valuable thing to say. That has really held me back, or I don't know if you want to say held me back, but deterred me from interacting with any entities. Because first, I need to know how to make this go away. If I don't want to be here anymore, I don't want it to be here anymore. I just kind of look at it like dealing with regular human beings. There's people in this world I don't want to invite over. And
Exactly.
there's people
Exactly.
that. When we're done talking, no, we're done talking and you need to leave, And I want that with any, if they're not a regular person, all the more so,
Exactly. Well, that's the thing. It's like, in the spirit world or in the other world, you're going to come across all sorts of different types of situations and beings, and you have to be kind of prepared for that.
Oh, yeah, that would, yeah. I noticed, well, you've lived in Italy for some time.
5 years now.
Okay. And you have, I don't think it's too much to say, a relationship with spirits that are based where you live.
Yes, it's taken me some time to establish that good neighbor policy with them, but I do.
Do you th think you were somehow drawn there? Or that was a fortunate occurrence, or I don't know. I'm kind of putting you on the spot, but
I know I do believe so. There was a point where I did like a series of synchronicities with a friend of mine going back a number of years that all seemed to circle around Bologna. Now my husband is Bolognese and we've chosen to make Italy our home. But it's like there's something here that I think wanted me to be here. And I found that when I was in 2017, I did a series of meditations in a set of Etruscan runes, and I was gifted after with a skull and bones that were on a pathway that I had just crossed before, and they weren't there before. And I took them
wow.
as a gift. And it was a connection to the local spirits of the land who, like I said, I have gone out of my way to learn the folklore, in part thanks very much to my husband because he's been able to explain to me the strange kind of beings and things that are here.
Wow.
And so I've been able to learn the lore, and over time I've been able to I go out into the woods often. I commune with the spirits that are here. I bring them gifts. I am very grateful to be here in their space, and I feel they know that. And so with that, it's our relationship here has deepened. I have our villa, it has its own house spirit that
Oh,
keeps
wow.
us safe. And so I acknowledge that as well. So along with my goddess and my other practice. So, but this has helped me in ways, because when I do some, and I have done some field research here on spook lights as well, I feel protected. I feel, and I feel in a good space here. So yes, I do feel I have been drawn here, but I mean, for reasons of love too,
Oh,
because
yes. There's
but also there is something else here that has made it very easy for me to be here. Like everything just sort of fell into place very easily, even just getting my visa to come here and that. And Italy is very well known for its bureaucracy, but things have been quite easy or made easy.
the
And
door's just kind of opened up. Wow, that is fascinating. That is really interesting. You were mentioning earlier the Sabbaths and the seasons and the, let me get the words right, so I talking about the right thing. The spring equinox is coming up. What can you tell us about that? What, how does that impact you, and what can you tell us?
Well, for us here in the Northern Hemisphere, we're going into spring, and so this is it is a really lovely time, I think. Although I didn't when I was much younger, but I do now appreciate, now that I'm much older, this cozy period of the winter. I really like the dark now, and I like the cozy period, and I like, snuggling up with a blanket and being inside and having a good book and things like that. So, but spring is coming, so we're coming out of the dark period now. Now is a good time for when I might set intentions for the coming year. And I will do my rituals in the forest. And I will probably do some spring cleaning, which is a practical thing and for around the house. And I will just honor the renewal of, we're coming into that period of new birth, rebirth. So I find it to be a very joyous period of time. And then, of course, my daughter, I was telling you this earlier, my daughter was born on the first day of spring. So again, it's a very joyous
That
time
is
frame.
really fascinating. And I had been asking you about this. This is before we started recording, folks. I had been asking about your last name because you have the last name of a classical goddess. And then this came up that, yes, also you had your daughter on the equinox. And that is just a fascinating synchronicity there. It's very interesting.
I really did flirt, because it didn't I it didn't it wasn't lost on me at the time either, that oh my gosh, Demeter and I'm having a baby on the equinox. But I did flirt with the idea of naming her Persephone too, but I didn't. I thought, no, that's too much. Like my sister has the name Diana, and she, that's the double goddess, so the Roman and the Greek, and that's a pretty powerhouse combination, and it's something to live with. That's a whole other story, but
Just right off the top of my head, I'd be afraid to name her Persephone because it might lead to custody issues. Six
exactly.
months and 6 months, and yes.
Exactly. So, it's funny, because she is a spooky kind of girl. She loves all the spooky vampire kind of stuff, and that's she's drawn to that, and
Fascinating.
probably Oh, what's those the fruit that she was tempted with? Oh, I forget that wonderful. Oh, it'll come to me in the middle of the night,
Oh,
my.
yeah, Not a
Who's that?
golden apple, a pomegranate?
Pomegranates, yeah. She loves those too. It's like, of course.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's
So
interesting.
yeah, so it's a wonderful time for people to set new intentions for the coming year. Get your spring cleaning done, and however you want to observe it, bring some of the springtime in. I reorient my altars as well at this point of the year, so they'll be having more spring-like thing. I'll bring probably some fresh flowers. We already have our flowers coming out here. It's very mild, even though I'm in North Italy. It is mild here enough that we are starting to see the spring flowers coming out, and it's really nice. Birds are singing, building their nests.
It's always seemed to me that New Year's really should take place around this time rather than in the absolute middle of winter. And I am not historically up on it, but I think at one point in time it was New Year's around March into very early April. And
I think so,
yeah, that got changed around, by the government and the Vatican a long time ago. But for a long time, New Year's was on a more natural New Year's where it's, spring and things are born and, everything kind of unthaws and opens up, and that's, makes a lot more sense to me than the way we do it on December 31st,
That's true. That's totally calendar related. But a lot of people as well, a lot of witches, pagans will observe their new year on Samhain, which is Halloween time. And that's because you're literally, everything has gone through that time of decay and death, and then you're going into the cozy period or the dark period where you're kind of, at rest and getting ready for the rebirth. So people will view that as the beginning of that cycle as well. So it really depends how you feel about it, when your new year would begin and end. I tend to observe it on Samhain on Halloween. I'm a Halloweeny kind of girl, but
And that's kind of like the yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. The dark before the day. That yeah, kind of I mean a lot of the Hebrew dark before day and
And
things
then you have
start
that.
at night, not in the morning.
And then at that point in at Yule, you really have, the beginning of the light coming back, because then the days start getting longer again, right? With the in the winter time. So at least
Yes.
here in the Northern Hemisphere. So I mean, it's all about, for me, observing and being closer to nature. My mother was very much, she wasn't a witch per se, but she was very bohemian, and she was very interested in like the sun and the moon and the stars as being representative to her of her spiritual self.
Wow.
She had gone through a lot of harm as a child with the church, and because of that, she became very nature focused. My father was very nature focused as well. He was like, very concerned about the environment. Being a scientist already in the 1970s, he was running around with a cloth bag, like
Oh,
way before
wow.
a trend. Yeah, so I kind of grew up with that kind of mindset, and I feel that, especially now, our with climate change and everything is so overwhelming in the news sometimes, that for me, I find a lot of solace in nature. Everything is a cycle. There are good times and bad times. There's a time for every season, as the song goes. And I feel
Oh.
being able to, oh, so
Oh,
cute.
yes, my co-producer,
Oh,
the
hey.
doorbell rang, and we have a pro barking dogs policy on the show because, yeah, he was sleeping, and somebody rang the doorbell to drop off a package, and he had to get involved. So, can't be interrupting here, but Yes, what you're saying, yes, we're at a real, critical point, and I'm sorry, give me one moment here. One
Yeah,
moment.
no, go for it.
We'll see what it is. Let's see what it is. We had technical difficulties there for just a moment as my little dog had to go see what the situation was. But yes, you were saying, Susan, that the we are in a time of climate change and real environmental crisis,
Yes.
and a lot of that our institutions that led up to this point don't really have a whole lot of answers.
Yeah.
And would it be fair to say that a lot of people are looking into what has been labeled alternative spirituality, but it's becoming much more mainstream, and are looking at the answers that, pagan belief systems and witchcraft and all the folk traditions hold? And what would you say the answers that those paths have that maybe, I hate to call them traditional because that stuff was there before those traditions, but maybe more conventional religion doesn't have that those answers anymore.
Yeah, I think what we need to do, and because of course as well with the indigenous spirituality, which was clearly robbed from a lot of people, and people are trying to reclaim that. These people, and amongst the ancient peoples as well, they lived much closer to nature. They were dependent on having a good environment to live in, or they would die. So they, they wouldn't overhunt. They wouldn't do these things. And I mean, we have gotten so far away from our mother, our planet. We don't hunt anymore. We don't gather anymore. A lot of us don't spend any time in nature anymore. So we're so far removed from that. And I hope that by looking at these older traditions, or remaking them into modern times, we take into consideration, our place on this earth. We share it with many other beings, unseen and seen, and that we have to start becoming good stewards of our planet. Because otherwise, the planet will be here, nature will come back, but we might not be here. So it's in our own vested interests to realize that, we have to take care of things. And I know that's overwhelming. It's been very overwhelming for me at various points in my life, but I just try to do what I can, like in my own little space. I will go out. When I lived in Ontario and Toronto, I joined some environmental groups that would go out and clean the lake, like of garbage, and just even little spaces of nature. Twice a year, go out and clean up. Or, I did a lot of guerrilla gardening in the day where, you would plant seeds where they just shouldn't be expected. And I do that here too. Like, they're, people will occasionally, if they're littering or whatever, and I, I'll just hex them. Well, no, I don't hex them, but I kind of want to. But I mean, like, I do that. Like, I try to be a good steward of my mountain here, and make sure the nature is being respected. But it's
It
just it's
seemed,
something we can do locally. Every
yes.
little bit helps, because otherwise you are overwhelmed.
Yes, and yeah, there can be a real problem of scale because the things we face are so massive. And, we can only do what one person can do.
Yeah.
But it's just, I guess we're kind of waking up. It took an emergency to get us to wake up that we can't treat the earth as just a thing that we can, take from and take from and take from, and
Yeah.
to hell with, 10 years from now. And that's not going to work forever. And we have to drastically get ourselves back on track here. And that's going to involve some changes 360. That's going to involve some real changes to our world that I think we're just seeing the tip of the iceberg now.
Yeah, but I do. I am an optimistic person. I do believe in the human spirit, and I do hope that we can get our acts together for future generations. I'm a grandmother now, so especially I'm very invested in the idea of trying to do something, but I do understand how overwhelming it can get. And I hope that with these, like you said, the popularity now of these alternative religions that are nature-based, people start really thinking about, what we can do to reduce our own waste and carbon footprint and things. Even if we can't affect huge change, maybe we can do something just in our own neighborhood.
Yes,
And the
that's
local
really
spirits. Yeah,
important.
the nature spirit, they will be happy. They will be so happy. It'll be a good neighbor.
Oh, you're finally talking to us again after so many hundred years.
Yeah,
Yes,
exactly.
that is well said. So that is really well said. I'm kind of we're just, time has kind of passed here. And man, I haven't scratched like about half the things I want to get to here.
Well, I can come back sometime,
Oh, absolutely. I
I'm
certainly definitely want to have you
enjoying
back.
the
There's one thing I can't close without asking about.
conversation. Yes.
And you're involved with the UFO Tarot. Could you tell
Yeah.
us about that a little bit?
Okay, so actually I have one of my sets here of the UFO tarot. I'll pull them out. Always, when I'm talking about them, I like to have them handy. But this was a project that was put together originally just around pandemic. My good friend Greg Bishop got a group of us together and said, "Hey, let's do an art project together." And we were talking about different ideas, and I think it was Greg that put forward the idea of a tarot deck. And since we were all kind of UFO people, the idea of doing just a UFO deck, we thought, well, there probably are other UFO decks or alien decks out there. There's certainly the starseed decks. One of them, which I really do love the starseed. I'm not really into starseeds, but there's an old starseed tarot deck I really love. But anyway, I'm
Wow.
digressing. So we decided we would take our knowledge of ufology as a social history and apply it to tarot and see what would happen. And so through a couple of years, we would meet on Sundays. We'd have what we called our Sunday salon, and we would talk about the cards, where we chewed the shit too, and just we were all stuck inside.
Yes. And Italy took this really seriously. United States, we're still stuck in, but you guys were really stuck in.
We were really stuck in, because it hit us like really hard first. I think we were the first in the world to kind of go down. It was scary. Like, I think I
I bet.
blocked out a lot of what was going on then, but nonetheless, I was privileged because I live in rural Italy, so I could go outside and take hikes in the forest and through the mountain, and that I wasn't completely shut in, even though we weren't supposed to. Shh. But it was difficult. It was a difficult time. So the UFO Tarot project really kind of kept me going because it gave me a social outlet as well as an art project to work on with a group, which is always fun. It's always
Oh,
fun to
yes.
have a group kind of thing. So we got together, we put together a Kickstarter, and after we had done a couple of cards as example cards as to what we wanted to do, and the Kickstarter was so like, we were surprised how successful it was. It made double what we thought it was going to. It was so amazing. And then what we did is we discussed the cards. We patterned them after the Rider-Waite-Smith, which is, I guess, the most popular, at least
I
in
think
North
that's
America.
what, when I think of tarot, that's, and I think most people who aren't deep into it, when you think of tarot, that's kind of what you're thinking of.
Exactly.
kind of medieval setup, kings and swords and stuff. And
Although it's not a medieval deck, the Marseille deck is older, and then of course there were the Italian decks, but I mean it's a relatively new Golden Dawn based system, but it's the most popular and very like it's how I learned tarot. So we decided on that system and that we would take the sort of archetypes of the major arcana. So there those are the major cards. Kind of the overarching archetypes of a tarot deck. And we would take characters from like actual people from ufology's history that made a strong impact that kind of fit with the actual archetype. So it was interesting because the Fool card in which is kind of the beginning of the mythic journey of tarot. Sort of, you have a figure who's kind of stepping off a cliff, I think is, and or stepping out into the world and has a little dog kind of beside him. The Fool card. We actually asked Whitley Strieber which card he wanted to be, and he picked one.
That's really cool.
So we have Whitley and everybody that's living, we of course, or has passed on that we could get a hold of a living relative when we decided on who they were going to be. And sometimes it was a bit of a wrestle between us as to who should be depicted on each card. Everyone we contacted, and most people like were just so thrilled to be on the cards or gave us permission or it was a really wonderful experience. And so the out of all that work came the ufology tarot with the brilliant artwork of Miguel Romero, who also designed the cover of my book, Cosmic Witch.
Yes, she's a fantastic artist.
He is. I told
Red
my
Pill
pub
Junkie, yes.
yes, the Red Pill Junkie. I told my publisher, I'm not going to publish with you unless you pay Miguel to do it. Not quite in those terms, but I was like, I have this artist, and if you're just going to go with stock image, like I can be a little aggressive at times. And I was like, no, it's got to be
Sometimes you
Miguel.
have
Got to
to.
be Miguel. So, and it's a beautiful cover. I love it. I have a full size poster of the book cover above my desk here, and yeah, it's his fabulous art. And but we all contributed: Greg, Josh, David Metcalf, myself, and
Well, there's a
Miguel.
huge brain trust in this thing. It was fascinating.
It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun, and hopefully we'll be able to finish the deck at some point, like do all the minor arcana. But for now, we have the major arcana finished and complete, and I think there still might be a few decks left for people that are interested. There was also a coffee table book that was produced, and we all took turns writing up the history. I wrote the history of the tarot. Jeff Kripal from Rice University, he wrote the introduction to the book, and then we each took turns writing about these people, and that was fun too because some of
Oh,
them I was
good.
not familiar with. So we would do research on these individuals, like Coral Lorenz and all the contactees and different people that came on the deck. Even people like I was very familiar with, like John Keel, I learned more about him through doing the research for this project.
I'm bad. That sounds absolutely fascinating. That does. I
Yeah.
know. Just from, well, I mean, it's been talked about. I think it was Miguel that was on another podcast. He was talking about the lovers are Betty and Barney Hill,
Yeah.
and I'm trying to think who. There are if there's somebody in ufology, they're probably in here. Keel and the scientist who was with Project Blue Book and then broke off to do his own thing, and his name is just escaping me, but everybody who's anybody, you might say, in
Yeah.
ufology shows up in this, and it sounds like a fascinating project. I'd love to have a copy of that. Absolutely.
Well, there are still some available, so
Cool, cool.
get you one through Greg.
Yeah.
But yeah, there, and it comes with like a little booklet. Like here, I can show you. The audience doesn't see, but
She's showing it's a little
yeah,
booklet.
it's a little booklet, but it's got all the different like key phrases in here. Like John Keel is the hermit, and he's in the he like it just has the little key phrases of what they're about and a little bit of their story here. So it's Andruffel is the strength card, and some of these characters have appeared in more than one. Like we have Phil Klass as the devil because that's a good space for him. He's show him to you. Whoops, there we go. Yeah,
Very
so he's
nice.
there, and I think he's with Carl Sagan and oh, I forget the other guy's name at the moment. Skeptics, but the
No,
devil card is not necessarily a bad card, but
it's.
it's quite detailed. It's actually got the US Air Force. It's got a plane in behind it. You can see as opposed to angel wings or devil's wings.
That is really nice. Wow.
The US Air Force in there. But I mean, it's basically representing the materialistic approach to like the super materialistic pro approach that it's nothing, everything has an explanation. Hard. And then we have Rosemary Guiley here as temperance. So she's striking a balance between the two kind of the worlds of UFO and paranormal, and that she's striking that balance. And that was really lovely. Rosemary has since passed on, and her late husband was able to give us a lot of material. And we did a lot of like little details in here, like even her, she had a purse with a little all-seeing eye on it. Favorite purse. So that all-seeing eye is included as a pendant on her image there, if you can see. She's got that. She's got a little red leather jacket because
Wow.
she always loved her leather jacket. We've kind of got her like as a little superhero almost.
Wow, the
As
level of
her.
detail is just incredible on that. I mean, this is a real art project.
Yeah, Dr. Carla Turner is the justice card because she was always seeking justice for people that were having these horrendous experiences with contact.
Yes, the whole abduction,
Yeah.
trauma thing,
So I mean, like there's a lot of them, and then there's Jim Moseley is on one with Gray Barker. So they were two characters. They're I love Jim Moseley. He was a trickster kind of guy. He's pain in the ass for a lot of UFO people, but I kind of loved him for that. Like I loved Saucer Smear. I thought it was hilarious.
That is one thing I have not gotten a chance to get my hands on, but
Yeah.
everything I've read from it has been absolutely really good.
Oh
And
yeah,
yeah,
he's
that's
crazy.
classic era where they're doing all sorts of things, and sometimes they were faking things just
Oh
completely,
yeah.
and then people would pop up and have had that experience that couldn't be connected to the original fakery, and was
Yeah.
just it was kind of making a thought form or something. It is really interesting what him and Barker were doing. It was and
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
they were tricksters. They were kind of there were shenanigans going on,
There
but
were shenanigans. There
it
were. Well, we have Alan Hynek.
that's what I was thinking. Yes.
Yeah, so Alan Hynek is here. He is our emperor, and we included the swamp gas, which I think is like, was his kind of biggest, regret is that
Yes.
he kind of came forward and said, Blue Book was designed to make this UFO thing go away, and in good conscience, he couldn't continue with
Yes.
it.
If I, for 2 seconds, can just elaborate, if I'm correct, he got sent to a UFO sighting in Michigan and didn't have any staff, any backup, any investigators, much of anything. and was just like, well, find a explain this away. Find an explanation that's nothing too strange and just make it go away. And, with his hands full and kind of operating by himself, and we need this done right away, came up with the swamp gas idea. And then that kind of was his kind of turning point that I don't want to do this anymore. And I don't just want to explain stuff away. I want to find out what's really going on and tell people the truth. And that guided him the rest of his life, as I recall.
Yes, absolutely. And it's incredible too, because
Oh,
like
yeah.
that case was in early March and it was freezing. And there's I'm from Ontario, which is not far from Michigan, right next door. And there's no way that this could have been swamp gas. So I
No,
think
that
that
doesn't
is,
exist then.
yeah, as a scientist, I think that was like his biggest kind of regret, is that he was coming up with these things that were just they were crazier than
It'd be easier to believe it was just a flying saucer and it landed. That's what happened. It would be easier to believe than the swamp gas coming
Exactly.
out of a frozen area that doesn't happen like that at all. We're not in the Everglades in July. That doesn't occur like that.
Yeah.
And
Exactly.
it shook him to have to make up stuff like that.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for your time here, Susan. Thank you for being a guest on The Weird Part. Is there something you'd like to leave our listeners with? I mean, no pressure. Just for well, I guess first of all, where can they find you? Where can somebody look you up?
Well, you can find me on pretty much all the socials, Susan Demeter. And I'm susandemeter.com. My website has links to all my social stuff, and it has other goodies in there, as well as my art and some articles I've written. And I usually keep it updated with things that I'm going to be up to and what I'm doing. So I always like to hear from people who have had high strange experiences. I've been there. I'm a sympathetic ear. I listen without judgment. And if you want to reach out to me, I'd love to hear from you. I've had all sorts of weird experiences myself. So like I said, I don't put any judgment on anyone's experience, no matter how strange it is. People will say to me, I've got this story, it's really strange. And I'm like, I've probably heard stranger. It's okay.
Hey, that's a very welcome thing in a world where that's not too common.
Sometimes just people need to express themselves, and they just need to be able to talk to someone, and I understand that. These experiences can be really extreme and frightening, and it's good to just know that you're not alone, and that a lot of people, have these experiences from all walks of life. It's, I think more people have had experiences than we realize. Just people keep them, either
Completely
they're
agree.
debunking their own experience because they just don't want to deal with it, or they just don't have anyone to speak to. So,
Think that's very true.
yeah, reach out.
Well, again, thank you for appearing here tonight. This has been The Weird Part. My special guest has been Susan Demeter. I'm Vincent Truwell. Thank you for listening, and good night.